is nigh. A cataclysm is coming, and Azeroth will never be the same again. This is a final voyage through the old world. And these are the many wonders you'll see.
Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Postcards from the Old World, one last tour around Azeroth before it is destroyed forever in the Cataclysm. I am Gafoni.
And I'm Arezzo.
And we're here with comments from Aleatiacta S members on three zones. Again, in this show, we'll be looking at the zones of Ferrolas, Dustwallow Marsh, and
Desolus.
Thank you for reminding me. How could I forget?
Yeah, one of your many favourite zones in the game.
Yes, I like all three of these zones, but I know that many people don't. Although we were surprised by some of the responses on the one I assumed would be everyone's least favourite. So let's see exactly what people think of Desolus.
The shattered landscape of Desolus is the legacy of past cataclysmic upheavals and makes the desolation suggested by the region's name all too real. Visitors to this part of Kalimdor will find a gray, barren aspect, littered with the massive bones of Kodo, and invaded by demons, satyrs, and no fewer than 4 warring center clans. The scattered horde and alliance outposts offer relief from the harsh land and its harsher inhabitants, and Ghostwalker Post, in particular, is close to the heart of the zone, overlooking the haunted Kodo graveyard and providing defense against the demonic forces in the nearby Manorok Coven.
So Desolus is clearly the zone that we thought most people would not like. Some people did, some people didn't. It was quite a mixed bag. But I think from our point of view, I mean, obviously it's one of the zones that you like a lot. I like it, but not as much as you do. And I think I dislike it for a lot of the reasons that people tend to cite. You know, it's big and open and a little bit featureless and colourless. It is desolate in many ways, and so it kind of lives up to the name. And it's also one of those zones that when you're at level, running around it just feels lethal, because like there is, you know, if it's not a scorpid, it's a centaur. If it's not a centaur, it's a demon. If it's not, you know, there's something around every single corner and in every single nook and cranny that is going to take an instant dislike to you. So I think it's just one of those zones that it's quite hard at level to really to kind of take in, because you're constantly on the lookout and you're running around so much from one side to the other doing the quests.
I'm not going to deny that. That mechanically it's a bit strange, and a few people make this point. You're kind of encouraged to go there in the early 30s, but to get there, there are two routes. There's the one through Ferrolas, which would be a mistake at the early 30s.
A fatal mistake.
And the other one is through the Charred Vale at one end of Stone Talon Mountains, which is going to be the obvious way you go. But to get to the first Horde outpost, if you go in a straight line, you walk through a big crater full of mid to high 30s, if I remember rightly, mobs, which is a little strange. Plus, it is a very long run to Ghostwalker Post. When you get there, there is no in or flight path. You have to go on a further very long run right to the other edge of the zone to find Shadowprey Village, the little troll town, where there is a flight path, where there is an inn. And that's a kind of a quest hub, but it's a quest hub, a kind of a couple of levels higher again. And there aren't a lot of quests there, actually. A lot of them start at Ghostwalker, which is a hard place to get to and from.
Yeah.
So I accept there's some very strange decisions were made there. All that said, there is something about the atmosphere of that zone that really appeals to me. The weird kind of yellow-grey colour of most of it. The strange sudden shift in atmosphere with the purple sky when you go to the little demon enclave there.
To the Manorok Coven.
there's lots of dangerous stuff going on. There's those demons there. There's the satire near Nigel's Point, the Alliance settlement. There's the Burning Blade, Thunderaxe Fortress with all the bad orcs,
which is really impressive as well. Actually, I mean, it's a real landmark.
Yep. There's the Centaur. There's the valley with the undead controlled by the Centaur. There's all the Centaur around Marauden above the ground there. And there's the really creepy Kodo graveyard. Like I said, there's that big crater full of the highest level mobs in the zone. There's the Naga off the coast. There is a lot of variety there. There's a lot going on.
Yes.
And I think if it were better designed, if the first place you got to had a flight path, if the first place you got to, first of all, wasn't so far away, and secondly, felt like a real destination, then I think people would like it more. I'm going to say, though, I do think it's that. I do think it's the fact that Ghostwalker Post feels so far removed from where you enter the zone and so difficult to get to. That is a big negative, and I understand people having a problem with it. However, think of the Hinterlands and the Horde settlement there.
Yeah.
That is miles away from where you come in.
Oh, yes.
And where you come in is practically, you have to walk through the Alliance settlement practically to get into the zone. Yeah. So I think there are worse offenders on that front.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But I think a lot of people, coupled with that, have a problem with the bleak aesthetic of the zone. And together, I think it puts people off.
Yeah, I think actually, in a way, the bleakness and the kind of the uniformity of the aesthetic, as you say, works against the fact that what you just ran through is, in fact, an extremely varied zone. That, you know, there are a lot of different kinds of mobs. There are a lot of different environments, weirdly, in which you can deal
with
them.
There are a lot of nooks and crannies and hidden lakes.
But it all just feels that the zone itself is so one note that it kind of makes, that's what you take away from it. You don't take away the variety of mobs. You don't take away the differences. You take away that uniformity. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing I always think about Ghostwalker Post as well is that it almost feels like its very existence is just Blizzard faking you out. Because you know you have done that ridiculously long run down from the entrance from when you come from the Charred Vale, and you get to what feels like, oh, I've finally made it, I'm at the outpost, fantastic, and where's the Flightmaster, and where's the inn, and where are all the traders, and etc. And so Shadow Prey itself, when you do get there, it's great, because apart from anything, it feels like you've really got past the fake out and you've got to the final destination. And also, it is, and somebody pointed this out, it's a little patch of green and lushness, you know, at the end of this terrible journey through all the grey and miserableness.
So, but it's not the only green lushness there.
No, but it is the one that I think people will remember, because it's it's the hub, it's the place you get to. It feels like the end destination.
Yeah. No, I accept all this. Yeah. I just don't agree with it.
And therefore, I am wrong and you are right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting zone. And there are a bunch of things in it that I think, you know, as we were going through it, we were noting needed to kind of be drawn out when we came to talk about it. One of those, which again was mentioned by a number of people, is that it's an interesting introduction to a concept that becomes a much bigger feature of the game later on, which is that idea that as you gain rep with one faction, you lose it with another because of all this, the factional infighting between the Centaur tribes. And you actually, with your, you know, as you set out on the quest, you need to start by choosing either I'm going to align with this faction against the other, or the other way around. And that's something, you know, think about Northrend and the Frenzy Hearts and the Oracles and all that kind of stuff. You know, and even the Scryers and the Aldor in Shattrath.
But I would contend that it's a terrible introduction to that system, to rep. If you forget about Burning Crusade, if we go back to the way things were in vanilla, fair enough, it introduces you to the concept that killing certain things might make other people happy, but it doesn't introduce the implications of that when you get to things like the Argent Dawn or whatever, whereby gaining reputation allows you to buy items you couldn't get otherwise. Doesn't introduce that at all. It just introduces reputation as a as a meter for likability. And just in terms of those quests, all it's saying is, if you get friendly with us, we'll talk more. It's not saying, if you get friendly with us, we have this reward for you. You know, I think there are better introductions to that concept, which is what reputation is about in the game, really.
Yeah.
Although I would say maybe it's changed. There was the way back in vanilla, you couldn't get to Winter Spring easily without being friends with that Firbolg tribe who live in the tunnels. Yeah, with the Timbermaw, that's it. And also the Timbermaw rep does open up some rewards for tailors, I think. If it's
And there's a couple of other things.
But blah,
as well,
blah, blah. Yeah. But again, the concept there was, if you want to get past us, you have to like us.
Or we have to like you.
Yeah. There's, But that, I don't know. To me, back in vanilla, I didn't really understand rep grinds in the same way I do now. Mm. To me, the idea of reputation went no further than the way it's introduced in Desolus, which is why I actually think it's not a great introduction, because it didn't introduce the concept to me fully.
Yeah, fair. And I don't necessarily think myself that it's a particularly great introduction. And I think one of the things that it doesn't really do is, it, you know, it presents you with this choice. You know, you can take this, you can take two quests, and essentially whichever centaur you end up killing first will determine which of the paths you take. But what it doesn't do is really give you any sense that there's a reason to do this. You know, the kind of the story reason is that, you know, we need to form alliances. You know, the Horde needs to form alliances within this zone. So help us by, you know, helping us get friendly with one or the other. But it doesn't take it beyond that, other than that, you know, when you start killing one side and getting friendly with another, there are a couple of quests that open up, and you can, you know, you can do that. But yeah, you're right. It doesn't create that sense of progression. What it does do is just introduce that idea of actual duality in rep, that gaining one by definition means losing another. But yeah, it's just one of those things that comes in here at this point in the game, and you know, will become a bit of a feature later on.
But apart from all that, I just think there's a lot of fun to be had there. If you can stomach the atmosphere, if you don't think that the atmosphere is too grim, and like I said, I quite enjoy that there's a zone that feels like that. I think there is a lot of fun to be had there. A lot of fun mobs, a lot of different kinds of mobs. I think it's a good zone. I think maybe we should see what people have said about it.
Sure. So from the thread on the AIE forums, various people commented, starting with Tradarian, who's not a big fan of the zone generally. In fact, quite the opposite. He says it's the first zone he truly despised. But the one cool thing, though, was the Kodo bones you see sticking out of the sand. It granted the area a very morbid feel and reminded me of the elephant graveyard from The Lion King, which I'm not entirely sure is the feel that they were going for, but I kind of get what you're saying. There's a lot of people talked about Marauden, and I'll kind of talk about those things together as a batch, because it's a very specific part of the zone. Warak, brilliantly, and there's a part of me that wanted to use the armory to kind of stalk him now and check out whether any of his characters have ever done Marauden, for example. Warak says, "I don't think I've ever even been to Desolus. I have zero memories of Desolus." I find it hard to believe he's never been, but you never know, I guess. O2L says, Desolus gets a big erg from me all round, except for one thing. I really like the shellfish traps. I farmed these to get my big iron fishing pole, which has a plus 20 to fishing skill. At the time, that was a darn good pole, and since it's a white item, I could give it to an alt or sell it when I got an upgrade. And the shellfish traps are just off the coast from Shadowprey Village, and it's one of the quests that you get there, is to go diving in the sea and retrieve... retrieve from the shellfish from the traps, which is it's a kind of nice touch, because it feels like you're helping in a weird little way the kind of economy of the village, because obviously the fisherman is after the shellfish to sell them. Gerlope was one of those who makes the point that, contrary to most people, he likes Desolus. The only objection to it is the long run from Stone Talon to Shadowprey Village, which obviously we've talked about, the Horde flight point, especially going through Manorok Coven infested with Burning Legion demons when I was too low a level to even think of fighting them. I like the choice of which centaur faction to support, an introduction to rep grinding. And Delthan made the point again about the early implementation of the idea we'd see later, which is the competing factions of centaurs. So, you know, it is something that people remember about the zone, whether they feel well or ill about the way that it's implemented or taken forward.
It's hard not to. I mean, I've leveled through it a few times, and it's hard not to come away with your kind of prime memory of questing being the centaur, because so many quests are built around it, and everyone will have made the decision, oh, which centaur do I start killing now? And I, hand on heart, Horde Altaholics will always side with, I think it's the Gelkis clan, simply because they're the ones that are near a Shadowprey Village.
The ones who are just outside the path down to Shadowprey Village. I know exactly what you mean. The other thing, I think the reason that people probably remember the centaur in Desolus is there are so many of them. There are three or four different clans, actually. Obviously, there are two that are particularly at war, but there are some others wandering around as well. So you can't turn a corner in Desolus without hitting one clan or the other. And Berger says something that I found completely unbelievable. He says, I've always found Desolus to be a very peaceful place in general, which is flatly at odds with my experience of everywhere you go, there is something out to kill you. And it was Berger that made the point. The thing that sticks out for me about Desolus is the troll village along the coastline. While every other part of Desolus is grey and morbid, somehow the trolls have settled in a very different area that seems a lot less dreary. I haven't investigated if there's a reason why it looks so different there, but it's out of place, is his description. Grimm talks about having had one of his first fondest early game memories on the Charred Vale Desolus border. A friend and I had worked our way through the Vale a little earlier than we should have until we got to Desolus. We stopped on the border and marvelled at the fortress just over the ridge. After a bit, we decided to venture over and see if it was a friendly place or not. As we trotted down the road, we suddenly saw a giant lumbering towards us. It was the first time we'd seen anything like it, and it's always left an impression. We ran back the way we'd come, aggroed a basilisk and a pack of hyena, and thus ended our Desolus adventure. Which I think is exactly what most people will think of Desolus. It's like, you know, as you're running away from one thing that's going to kill you, you just get killed by something different. And again, talking about the centaurs, Zaray says, the most notable thing for me in this zone are the centaurs. The quest line that takes you into Marauden and fills in the story of Cenarius and his sons is quite the trip, which is actually a good point. There's a lot of backstory on the centaurs and all of the lore that they've touched on. A lot of it comes together in Desolus. So, you know, they're not just there as filler. There's quite a lot of flavor to them being there. Bella Fiore, and I apologize if I'm pronouncing that completely wrongly, makes a general point about the three zones that we're talking about today. Each of these zones are atrocious. Poor navigation by way of terrain blocking features, drab colours, and just long stretches of running with no mount. I make it a point to avoid all of these zones when leveling alts. Too many memories of hoofing it with no mount. So there is a real mixed bag of views on Desolus. And certain things stand out, you know, the centaurs stand out and Marauden stands out and so on. But there's very little, I think, that people... There's no real consensus, I think, on this as a zone. Talking about some of the key features that, you know, that as you explore it, as we're talking about the zone as a last visit before the cataclysm, you know, there are some real standouts. We talked briefly about Thunderaxe Stronghold earlier, and I think it's an amazing feature. It really feels like a stronghold apart from anything. You know, it's kind of got big thick walls to the buildings, that it's well defended and fortified, and there are a bunch of quests that will take you there that are to do with infiltrating it and, you know, retrieving things from it. There are interestingly, on the Alliance side, there are a couple of quests in there that are effectively have the same object but are presented in completely a different way. You know, one is a rescue quest when you're on the Alliance side, and on the Horde side it's much more a go in there and slaughter everything you can find quest. So I think that's pretty impressive. And I think it is one of those things that as you first see it looming on the horizon, you know, it is a massive landmark and something that really stands out in my memory of the zone.
I think my favorite two kind of chunks of questing there is the quest that takes you into the valley full of the skeletons, just because I like the place so much. It feels so weird. And you get that quest. It's quite a tough quest to solo, where you have to put down the ectoplasm gatherer and fight off wave after wave of centaur ghosts before you can complete the quest. I enjoy that place a lot. I also like all the stuff with the Naga off the coast, because Desolus is a big zone, a really big zone. Even if you've got an epic mount, it takes a long time to get around. But still, when you get to the coast and you find those quests, it unfolds even further off into the sea, all the sunken highborn temples down there and the stuff on the island with the Naga. And that bit feels different to the rest of the zone. It feels fun. There's some great lore there. I really like it. I really like the whole thing. Sorry. I'm very glad to hear that I'm not alone in that anymore.
Yeah, I agree. And you mentioned it earlier on. I think another great standout point in the zone is the Kodo graveyard. Because
The Kodo taming quest you get off the goblin near there is fun.
Yeah.
And the one where you have to investigate the Kodo bones and they turn into ghosts of Kodos. Yeah, they do, don't they? Yeah. They attack and that's fun. And they're fun mobs to fight, I remember. They do a couple of interesting things. But
Okay. And then the big thing that we haven't really talked about, but a few other people did in their comments on the thread, is Marauden. An instance I will freely admit I detest.
It. I absolutely hate
totally it. Totally detest.
I hate most of the old world. As you know, Arezzo, I've been leveling a shaman on my lunch breaks and things strictly through the Dungeon Finder. And it's just making me remember how much I really don't like the vanilla dungeons. And I'm dreading Marauden because it is so big and confusing and things. But there was somebody who, like, it's their favourite thing ever.
Yeah, a couple of people said really positive things about it. Shandris said, and Shandris actually wrote quite a lot about it, and so I encourage you to go and look at the thread because I won't read it all right here. But Shandris's point is Desolus has Marauden. Mara has got to be my favourite five-player instance in the old world. It's incredibly huge and complex, but also insanely beautiful and varied. The final boss, Princess something or other, he questions Theradras, which is right, presents a very challenging fight at level between her debuffs and the way she likes to spread people out away from the healers if you're not careful with your positioning. I mean, come on, her farts make the ground shake, which is, I guess, is a feature if you like that kind of thing. There was one view there.
I'm not going to deny there's lots to like. That fight is really good fun. And parts of Marauden are varied and beautiful and breathtaking. I remember there's one bit where you can see up to the sky and there's lots of waterfalls and it is pretty amazing. But if you can tell me how to get there from the door within 2 minutes, I'll give you 1,000 gold.
Worst thing about it,
I don't really mean that.
Yeah. Actually, don't commit yourself to anything. Worst thing about it, I think, is if you die there, finding your way back to the instance portal is a nightmare.
And then even when you do find your way back to the instance portal, how on earth do you find the rest of your group?
Yeah, well, exactly. And is it the right instance portal? Because there's at least two, a couple of ways in. And I died on this occasion, but I have particularly grim memories of one weekend when I was working on Loremaster, because there are a bunch of quests in Marauden that count towards Loremaster of Kalimdor, which is the big difficult one to get. And I did what I thought were all the quests in there, got out and discovered some more, went back and did those, came out. I ended up doing Marauden 3 times in one weekend. And if I never do it again, it will be about a month too soon because that just finished me off on it. Absolutely. But yeah, if you die in it, just good luck, honestly, finding your way back in to retrieve your body. So I think they were kind of the key things that people had to say about it. I think it is one of those zones that it's a little bit love it or hate it. It's got some great stuff in it, I think we both think. But, you know, I think there are some areas in it that, that you can kind of see why people aren't such fans.
So, yes, that's Desolus. Thank you for making me not feel alone in liking it with your comments. And we will now move on to our next zone, another favourite of mine, of both of us, I think.
Yeah.
Dustwallow Marsh.
The marshlands west of Theramore have seen huge changes in recent years with the founding of the Goblins Outpost at Mudsprocket and greater activity in Brackenwall Village. And the humans of Theramore have consequently seen their hold on the region weaken. Solitary houses lie deep within the swampy land, some infested by ghosts, others reputedly the home of a witch. The marsh itself remains unchanged, its depths swarming with crocolisks, spiders, wind serpents, and along the shores and bay, murlocs and makura. Most dangerous of all, dragonkin of the Black Dragonflight have taken over much of the southern lands. Every turn holds menace, and in her lair at the heart of the marsh, none greater than the Dragonflight's broodmother herself, Onyxia.
I think you and I have a very interesting take on Dustwallow, which is having known it in the old days before patch 2.3 and then having known it again in the days post patch 2.3. Because effectively, Dustwallow as it used to be and Dustwallow as it is now are almost two different zones.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, the
But I still liked it back then anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it, but again, not quite as much as I think you did. But the for those who don't know, Dustwallow used to basically have two points in it that were of any interest to anybody. There's Theramore, which was significantly interesting to the Alliance because it's one of their ship ports.
Yeah, it used to be. Before they introduced some extra shipping routes, ferry routes, I guess, it used to be a really important hub.
Yeah. It was effectively the Alliance way into the lower part.
Yeah, because you could never... Nowadays, you can go from Oberdeen to Stormwind direct.
Yeah.
But way back when, oh, heaven forbid, you'd kind of have to go from... You'd have to find your way to... If you wanted to get from Stormwind to Darnassus, and assuming you had minimal flight paths,
you had
to get the tram from Stormwind to Ironforge.
And then get around
get
to
from Ironforge Menethil. To Menethil Harbour, take the boat from Menethil to Theramore, and then fly on from Theramore. No,
you could fly direct from Menethil to Oberdeen.
That's right.
Yeah. Not fly. You could get the boat, I should say, direct. Yeah.
Which takes out Theramore from the equation entirely, so I don't know why.
But if you ever wanted to go to the southern part of Kalimdor...
Yes, that Theramore was the only way.
So if you wanted to get to Tanaris or Angora or any of those places, that was what you had to do.
I guess that's what you still have to do, actually.
I suppose it probably is. Yeah.
Wow, what a detour we've taken.
Anyway, so in the old days, there was Theramore for the Alliance.
It felt very, very important for some reason. It was always significantly more busy.
Yeah.
Than anywhere else, and this is annoying me now.
Well, but I think it was Bayera because it was...
No, she was here.
Yeah, it was because that. It was the hub into the lower part of Kalimdor. It probably is.
If you want to get to southern Kalimdor now, there's a portal in Dalaran to the Caverns of Time.
True.
At 70, if you had the right rep, there was a portal in Shattrath to the Caverns of Time.
Yeah.
But what am I missing? Something has changed, and this is going to annoy me now. But let's move on.
Yes.
The point is,
there were two major points. And there was Brackenwall Village, which was a little ogre town that was a bit of a hub for the Horde.
Now, this is, we're saying, points of interest at level, because obviously there's also always been Onyxia's lair there.
Absolutely. But you know, from the point of view of leveling through this zone, those were the two points, whichever side you were on. Theramore was always a big Alliance place because of the lore position, because it was where Jaina went, and there's a whole bunch of stuff around that. Brackenwall was just always a bit of a nothing. Patch 2.3 came along, and as a consequence, Dustwallow was a bit of a nothing. It was a bit of a nightmare to get around. There's one windy road, and because of the geography of the zone, it's very difficult to get through it without following the windy road, because there's an awful lot of windy, twisty coastline and lots of stuff where you can't get up out of the water onto the land. So it was always a bit of a nothing. Patch 2.3 came along and a bunch of things happened. One was a whole bunch of new quests got added to Brackenwall. At the same time, a totally new quest hub was introduced with a flight point and an inn, which is at Mudsprocket in the southern part of the zone, which is a little goblin outpost. And suddenly, the way that that the whole zone was tooled was designed as a way to level characters in Southern Kalimdor towards level 40. And so what we started doing was, I mean, effectively it became our kind of mid-30s to early 40s alt leveling area, didn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. Whenever I hit 35 now, it's straight
off to Dustwallow.
To Dustwallow. Yeah. because you can pick up a load of quests at once. They're well designed. They take you to a place where you can do three or four quests quickly, efficiently, move on to the next bit, do another three or four. Plus the stories are good.
Yeah.
Plus I like the atmosphere of the zone. Something else happened in patch 2.3 as well, I think, which kind of reinvigorated leveling as a whole, I think. But just because it came hand in hand with that, it was quite good. But that was when they retooled the levels 20 to 60 experience curve to be slightly lower. So yeah, it's always been a favorite.
Yeah. And there's a lot of the other thing about it is that, as you were saying, you get a group of quests and you go and do those quests, and they tend to be they're focused around particular areas, and you do the quests in that area and then you go back and you turn those in, and then you get sent to another, and it feels like progression. We've talked about this with a couple of others as well,
and an actual kind of geographical progression through the zone. It's interesting, actually, like on the last show, if you remember, I said that these three zones we're dealing with on this show are three of my favorites. Desolus and Feralas are both my favourites because of how they feel, because of how they look. This one is simply one of my favourites because, like I said, when I hit 35, I go and do that because I know I will have four or five, maybe six, levels of really well-designed questing.
Yeah,
I'm not going to have to scrabble around to find things to do. I will be pointed in good directions to do good quests, to have fun. I do like the aesthetics of the zone a lot, but not as much as of the other two zones we're discussing here. For me, Dustwallow now is all about the quest design.
Yeah. And the experience there of getting through those levels and moving from, like you say, the quests are actually interesting and they have stories to them. Which a lot of the quests at that kind of level that haven't been retooled really don't have a great deal going for them on that front. But if you think about, what's haunting Witch Hill and that set of quests there, where you've got to go and find somebody who's living out in the middle of the marsh, who, as it turns out, is being possessed by something, and there's all sorts of weird stuff going on, and there's a progression through those quests that leads to you ultimately confronting the entity that has possessed him. Yeah, those by themselves, they all take place in a relatively small area, but there's an actual story to them. You do one thing and it leads to another, and there is a consequence at the end of it, which is you've defeated the bad guy.
And that's true of the Mudsprocket quests involving Anixia's brood. Actually, that overlaps with some stuff going on in Brackenwall Village as well.
Yeah,
you get this sense. I mean, it was kind of a gift to Blizzard, really. You have Anixia's lair in the zone, which is obviously now is a level 80 instance. Haven't done that for a long time. We should do that sometime. but it was a kind of gift because it shapes so much of the area around it with all the dragonspawn everywhere and things.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a gift for quest design because it's like suddenly Blizzard think, oh, this thing isn't just endgame relevant. We can make it relevant to people leveling through. So they fix some of the levels of the mobs wandering around. Mm. They put you on a quest chain that gets you, first of all, to identify who these dragons are, and finally leads you to a fight with a big... It's not hard to solo at level, but it still feels quite climactic. That fight in the doorway
of Anixia's lair,
which is, of course, giant rock dragon jaw.
Which is amazing. I mean, that is alone. Certainly when you first see it, literally when the very first time you see that in the game, and you realise you're going to have to go into the dragon's mouth, it's a really cool moment.
It's quite creepy.
Really creepy, but really cool.
Yeah, and it's something I kind of wish Blizzard would do more, which is take things that are relevant... kind of swap the levels up, mix it up a bit. So, and I'm kind of hoping we'll see some of this in Cataclysm, with all the new Cataclysm zones being essentially based in the old world. Just have a bit of an overlap. I mean, obviously that's the whole point of Cataclysm, is that what the level 85 final boss does changes everything for everyone at every level.
Yeah.
But just the fact that you can do some Onyxia related stuff at level 40 and, you know, finally meet her again at level 80. I think they should do more of that.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think in a sense you've just touched on something. I think we've kind of skirted around a little bit as we've talked about some of the zones that are going to change in Cataclysm. In a sense, I suspect that even those zones that don't physically change too dramatically, from what it sounds like, there'll be that same sort of sense when you go back to them after Cataclysm is released, that it will be a familiar place, but with unfamiliar...
With a twist,
exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, in a sense, Dustwallow is kind of like almost like the prototype of that. You know, it used to be like it was. It's now become something different, which is an improvement, I think we'd absolutely say. And, I mean, you know, probably it'll change again,
but I think we will... be seeing a lot of stuff like that. We know the levels of a lot of zones are changing, and obviously we know a lot about the world is changing, which is why we're doing this podcast.
Absolutely.
But I'm really holding out hope for example, if come Cataclysm you're leveling through the wetlands, this probably will still only apply to the Alliance after the expansion's released, but even so, say you're leveling through the wetlands, it would be nice if at what level 20 odd you do a bunch of quests that have something to do with Grim Batol, with the effects of that specific zone, not merely, oh, this rock wall has fallen down and revealed something, but something lore wise, something plot wise about something you actually won't deal with until you're in your mid 80s.
Yeah.
I think that's a really nice way of tying the world together, of making each part of the world feel relevant to the next.
Yes.
And it's something we don't see often enough, and I would like to see more.
Yeah. So that rather than just the purely physical geographical changes, that there actually is an environmental change
just change what town is underwater, which road you can't use anymore. Yeah. It changes what it means to be a dwarf in that region, because you have to deal with this thing which is affecting your life now, your way of life, not just the way you walk.
Or where you go. I think that's fair. And I think you're right. It would be nice if there was more of that.
Yeah. And that is exactly what Dustwallow feels like. It feels like the existence of Onyxia as a level 80 now boss has an impact beyond the world of the level 80 characters.
Yeah.
It's spilling back 40 levels and you're dealing with it there.
Yeah.
I like that.
I completely agree. And I mean, you know, the other advantage that all of that lore has is that it's dragons. And
let's face it, dragons
are always cool. So, and I guess this isn't a Warcraft specific thing at all. Dragons just feel epic. You know, there's something about them that just feels like they are big and scary, and even just the dragonkin wandering around in Dustwallow. This is these are things you shouldn't be messing with, and I think that there's an advantage there. But I think that's something that, you know, the whole zone feels touched by this incredibly dangerous power, because quite a long way from Nyxia's lair, you do stumble across random wandering dragonkin.
Yeah.
So looking at what some of the contributors to the thread talked about as far as Dustwallow is concerned. A lot of people picked up on things that we've already kind of discussed in terms of the transition between what used to be in Dustwallow and what's now in Dustwallow. So, for example, Faust says, you know, however, until the new quest hubs were added in patch 2.3, that zone was basically a wasteland. After that, it benefited greatly from Blizzard's quest design experience and became a preferred leveling location, which I think is exactly our experience. Amali says that I also love the Mudsprocket questing hub in Dustwallow. It's a lot of good, solid quests put in a place that was horribly grindy backwater before. I'm beginning to sense that there is a thread here, a trend. Then Gurlope pointed out that it's an interesting place with many Crocs, Dragonkin, Grim Totem Tauren, etc. Finding that Pagel to advance my fishing skill back when it was necessary was a several hour adventure search through lots of mob attacks. That part of the zone is actually, I think, really is cool. All the little islands with stuff on them.
The Grim Totem stuff, just brief detour, is really good. If you are the kind of person who doesn't read quest text, if you ever get a chance to do it again, do read the quest text here, because it's a big mystery, which kind of has massive Horde and Alliance political implications and a conspiracy to it. It's really good fun.
Yeah.
Really good fun.
Yeah. Gullup continues. The ogre quests in Brackenwall Village were interesting, though way too much running back and forth across the marsh before Mudsprocket was added. I especially like the end where you have to chase off the current leader of Brackenwall, which again is one of those again. There's a quest chain that leads to a consequence, and the consequence is effectively, you know, that there's a coup that you are invited to contribute towards against the leader of the village. So a lot of good stuff to get your teeth into in that part of the world now. Delthan actually started playing right after 2.3 hit, so the revamped Dustwallow Marsh is all I've ever known, he says. As such, I tend to have good memories of questing here on both Alliance and Horde. The Shady Rest Inn questline is a good one on both sides, although the Alliance gets a better payoff, in my opinion. Now, the Shady Rest Inn question is the one that links into the mystery of the Grim Totem all of that kind of stuff. And actually, it is one of those things that a lot of people know about, because it doesn't really have a proper ending, which is one of those kind of weird, frustrating things. Because from what I've gathered over the years, that it was intended to lead somewhere, and then that just never quite got implemented fully by Blizzard.
It does in some way fizzle out. But I think if you join the dots, you can see where it was meant to.
Yeah, see the conclusion, i.e. the conclusion that you reach in terms of the investigation, is that it's there, it's fine, you know what it is. It's just that it doesn't it feels like it's building up to something that never quite materializes in kind of terms of the action of the quest chain. Anyway, Delphin wraps up, and I think this is a totally fair point. The place is just a teensy bit dreary, but it's hard to be all full of flowers and happy clouds when the daughter of Deathwing built her house in your backyard and sends her kids out to be a general nuisance in the neighborhood, which is a really good way of looking at it. And Berger tells a story of having been one-shotted by a huge crocodile the first time he went in there, a little bit below level, and makes the point, every time I head into that area now, I still find myself looking behind trees and around corners, even though I can easily one-shot everything in the zone. It's creepy, swampy, and beautifully constructed. And also wraps up again another comment about Mudsprocket and that part of the southern part of the zone. The addition of the goblin town of Mudsprocket and associated flight point have turned this zone around for me in terms of questing appeal. I still remember my first look at the entrance to the lair of Onyxia, that great moor jutting up out of the swamp with the portcullis of teeth, which again I think is exactly the impact that it had on us. So they're the comments that people made, and I think they reflect a lot of our experience, not just this time round as we kind of leveled the new characters through the zone, but I think what we felt about it certainly since the 2.3 changes.
Definitely.
So check it out. I think is that do not miss Dustwallow is my takeaway from it all. There's a lot going on. It's interesting. It's atmospheric. It feels well structured. When you do hit 35, you can almost guarantee that if you work your way through all the quests in a logical order as they're presented to you in Dustwallow, you are gonna hit 40 or 41 in a really interesting.
More like 43, 44, I think.
Yeah.
By the time
you finish absolutely everything. Yeah. And you'll have done it in a way that will feel interesting, and that and there you'll be, you know, in your 40s, ready to move on to new challenges, which, for example, might be where we're going to talk about next. But before we do that, we have one of our regular Alliance viewpoints on the zones that we're talking about, and Bear has been taking a look at Dustwallow for us, so here's that.
When I played Alliance several years ago, I liked to set my Hearthstone at Theramore whenever I could rationalize it. It's a lovely port city with a spacious layout, plenty of useful NPCs and ship service to the Eastern Kingdoms. The place even has its own sea monster, although Tether is not nearly as fun or impressive since they nerfed him. Tether's water spouts used to send players flying off the docks as they furiously tried to down him with the harbor cannons. Before Northrend dropped and Aberdeen got a direct connection to Stormwind, there was always a healthy bustle in this town, and it was fun to hang out and level fishing. Theramore has seen some turbulent times. Lady Jaina Proudmoore founded the city as a home for those who had escaped with her to the Eastern Kingdoms during the Third War. There Jaina ruled for many years as she built better relations with the Horde and forged the new alliance to battle the Scourge. When her own father, Admiral Thalen Proudmoore, seized control of Theramore, intending to wipe out her new Horde allies, Jaina refused to allow her own forces to support the Kul Tiras fleet. Her decision preserved fragile peace, but she lost her father and divided the loyalties of her troops. Just as deserters threatened the unity of Theramore's military force, Jaina also found herself faced with defiant activity, disturbing rumors from Stormwind, and a murder mystery to solve. Both Alliance and Horde in Dustwallow Marsh investigate the burning of the Shady Rest Inn, afraid that the murder of human innocents will result in renewed bloodshed between them. Alliance adventurers will find themselves hunting turtle meat and crab legs, while they also check out a mysterious Defias salvage operation offshore. As luck would have it, there is a connection between the Defias activity and the mysterious missing diplomat who you've previously been sent to track down. It would seem that the Defias kidnapped none other than King Varian Wrynn, and that the whole plot was masterminded by Lady Prester, a noble of the Stormwind court, except that she's actually the human form of Onyxia, daughter of Deathwing. Of course, these days that's old news, and it's a little disappointing that you don't get to follow the whole quest chain through anymore. Instead, Jaina will give you a little rundown of how Varian was held captive at nearby Alcaz Island, but escaped his captors and is safe and sound back in Stormwind. When Cataclysm comes and the Alliance claims part of the Barrens, Theramore will likely return to its hustling, bustling glory days. I just hope that they think about making the sea monster Tether into a level 85 boss.
Okay, and Bayera will be back in just a little bit to talk about the next zone we're going to, which is Ferelas.
Lush, densely forested Ferelas stands as a stark contrast to the neighboring regions of Desolus and Thousand Needles, though its peaks and valleys can be every bit as perilous. Elven ruins litter the land, including the huge stronghold of Dire Maul, and almost all are overrun by the vicious Gordunny ogres. From the outpost at Mohache, explorers can reach most of the zone easily, though the splendor of the twin colossals in the north is a long ride away. Dragonkin and harpies infest the ruins to the north, and the shoreline to the west is home to naga, elementals, and giants. These last in particular are no longer as great a threat as they were in times past. And be wary, for something is emerging in the writhing deep.
Okay, with Ferelas, we're back to talking about a zone which mechanically and geographically is an absolute swine to get around and quest in, but is atmospheric and pretty to look at.
Totally. This is my turn to be a little bit excessive in my praise. This is one of my top three zones in the game. I love Ferelas. Totally love it. Despite the road and all the stuff that people always complain about, I love its atmosphere. I love the way it feels. Somebody in the thread used the phrase old forest of it. And I think that's exactly what it feels like. It's totally different than all the other forests in the game. It feels old. It feels like, you know, it feels ancient. In fact, it's well established. It's totally overgrown. It's like a forest that has gone absolutely out of control. Mm-hmm. And I totally love it.
It is really weird that it borders two very dry, dusty zones at either side. You've got Thousand Needles at one side, Desolus at the other. But if you stop to look, particularly at the Thousand Needles end, what it actually is Thousand Needles covered in greenery.
Yeah, because if you look at the geography, even all the way up to the Twin Colossals, it's like there are just more needles. The needles carry on through Ferrass, which is one of the things I've always loved about it.
Yeah.
There is that odd, almost like a straight line.
There's a really hard...
Yeah, that divides the two in terms of the kind of the colour and stuff like that. But the underlying geography, the topography, I guess, is actually quite consistent, which I think is a really good feature.
Mm-hmm. No, I love it too. And again, I mainly love it because it is such a pleasant place to look at while you're questing.
Yeah.
And I'd contend that the quest design isn't that bad. You like get a couple of quests to go and deal with the ogres off in one spot, a couple more quests to go and deal with the ogres off in another spot. You've got the Yeti down at one end, and you're kind of sent to a place where you're expected to spend some time. There is a bit of constant back and forth with the Knoll quests particularly. Yeah. But there's a quest there I really, really love. It's a timed quest where you have to kill four of the Knoll alphas. And it's not hard. I think you're given an hour to do it in.
Yeah,
so but it's still... I think timed quests are kind of fun, as long as they're not really punishingly short deadlines. Mm. Because it does add a sense of urgency that otherwise you wouldn't have.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, I've got to get to that mob. I've got to get to that place. And that balance between getting there quickly and killing the things you need to kill so they won't kill you back. No, I think it's a fun place.
Yeah.
And again, lots of hidden little things, the Highborn Ruins. As a Horde player, the kind of Alliance Island is hidden from you in effect. Mm. Feathermoon
Stronghold.
Stronghold. You've got the Silithids hive hidden away behind some trees behind the Knoll camps. Yeah. And it's not that hidden, but the most hidden. Actually, I'm thinking about it really opens up towards the north. You have all the extra quests on the coastline. You have the quests with the Harpies. Up in those ruins.
The ruins of Ravenscar.
The ruins
Ravenwind.
Ravenwind. but crucially, the most hidden place is the other island next to Feathermoon, which you won't have any reason to go to as Horde.
No.
As Alliance, there are some quests that send you to its shores, but not into the heart of the island. Mm. If you have never been to the heart of the island, and I haven't been for a while, so I hope they haven't changed this, I'd go and have a look.
Yeah.
There's something there, which I think long ago was involved in a cooking quest, bizarrely. I could be completely wrong about that. But yeah, it's that island is very cool.
Yeah.
It's altogether very cool, yeah. I think.
A few people commented on the fact that some of the quests feel a little bit like fetch and gather kind of stuff. But I think, again, although it doesn't benefit quite so much from that, the kind of the change that came in Dustwallow that we were just talking about, it does feel like there is a progression through the zone. There is, you know, you start off, you know, the Horde encampment. Actually, I would hate this zone as an Alliance because it's the road
you
goes right
get
through the
from
middle
one end to the
of
other, yeah.
The
yeah.
of the Horde town.
Not easily, anyway.
Exactly. And so, you know, I remember days gone by kind of swimming down through the lake and going round it and stuff like that. But, you know, you start there and then you do some quests and then you do some more quests. And eventually it opens up the northern part of the zone where there are dragonkin, where there are the harpies, where there are giants. There's all sorts of stuff that kind of where that part of the zone gets harder. And actually, the very first time I went into Ferrolas, again, years ago on an Alliance character, I came in from the north from Desolus, and was one shot by a dragon, not realizing at all that I'd gone into a zone that was so significantly higher in level than the one I was coming out of. But yeah, it, you know, you start off in one place and you build up and you do get to see the kind of the ruins and all the stuff and eventually to deal with the dragonkin in the northern part of the zone. So again, it feels like you move through it in a way that makes sense and that leads you and kind of grows your experience and grows your character.
I just think, unlike, say, Dustwallow or most of the, you know, most of the questing in Northrend, you are moved through it bit by bit, but you still have to go and come all the way back to Camp Toraho.
Yeah.
Not Toraho.
Mahache.
Mahache. but for all that, I think it's a great zone. And I think this is something that's going to come in the comments a lot. If you, there is one thing in Feralas, don't know if it's going to be there, I really hope it will be after Cataclysm, that if you have never done, you have to go and do, which is find the Night Elves hiding out at the base. Well, one Night Elf hiding out at the base of the Twin Colossals.
Yeah.
She will cast a spell which sends you to the top of one of them, where her friend scams you and sells you a parachute to go back down again. And even that you have to use with care.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's but the view from up there is brilliant. It's great. It's really good fun.
And again, it's this kind of great colour. It's like, actually, they are in fact a pair of con artists.
Yeah.
But you don't get that at all. There's a quest giver, so you take the quest because that's what you do in World of Warcraft. And then bad things happen if you try and jump off.
Yeah, heaven forfend you go up there without any money on you.
Yeah, oh, totally.
And you'll be in trouble.
Obviously, certain classes have an advantage. Anybody who can levitate or slow fall is all right there. Or you could half off it, I suppose, but that kind of defeats the purpose. Exactly. Yeah. To summarise my view on it, I think it's a great zone. I love the fact that it feels like nature has won. You know, every ancient sign of civilization has been overgrown, it's fallen down. The whole place just feels completely, I mean, obviously it appeals to the innate druid in me, I think, from that point of view as well. Looking at some of the points that people made on the thread about it, and as you say, a couple of people definitely specifically picked up on the whole Twin Colossals and the scam there. Chandris pointed out that the view from the top of the Colossal is breathtaking. You can see all the way to the elite dragon boss across the river to the northeast, to the walls of Dire Maul and lush forest in every direction as far as the graphics card can see. And again, it's one of those things. Obviously, yes, you can teleport up there because that you can do that quest, but the kind of the specialness of that, I think, will be lost a bit when you can fly up there any old time you want to. And I think that's going to be a little bit of a loss come the day. Amali has a strong love-hate relationship with Feralas. When I was leveling there, I really enjoyed the scenery. It's an interesting contrast to everything else in the level bracket. The theme of growth corrupted is really cool, and the deep greens a nice contrast to all the brown and orange of the rest of Kalimdor, which is precisely, I think, the point that we were making. But God help you, if you die in Feralas, your corpse run could take 25 minutes. Gurlope, again, everyone's talking about the scenery. The scenery is beautiful, but the mobs are too plentiful, are a little too close together and respawn pretty quickly. Since the quest hub, Camp Mahache, is on one end of the area and the high-level quests were on the other, with a long run in between, I didn't do many of the higher-level quests. And I think that's probably something a lot of people do, because by that point you could move on to another zone. And I think it's unfortunate because you could miss out on some really nice stuff up there. Delphin really likes the zone. I love the old forest feel and how it feels different than the other forests in the game. It's not really spooky forest or magic forest or diseased forest or even jungle forest, but something entirely different. And again, that's exactly what I think we both thought. Koala, you see, this is my spiritual friend. Feralas is one of those zones that made me feel like an actual druid. So much wildlife and untamed land, it was truly breathtaking. Feralas has a terrible road, as we all know, but in my opinion, it's worth it for the sheer awe effect you get as you discover all that is around you.
Now, yes, it's another of those zones that is built around a single winding road, which you need to use to get around. But I love the road in Feralas. You've got the bit going north from the Horde camp. You've got the bit where it goes under the roots of a giant tree as it winds up a mountain.
Yeah.
You then have this beautiful stone bridge next to a waterfall. And then the road takes you further down past some highborn ruins on the left, the ruins of Dire Maul on the right, you know, acres of forest. And then it goes along again over another ancient stone bridge along this fantastic cliff top overlooking the sea. And then it carries on even further through the Twin Colossals and then on to Desolus. I think it's a beautiful road to run down.
It really is. Actually, the next point I was going to make was Grimms, which is very much along those lines. And so I won't kind of read it because you've kind of just encapsulated it. But it is true that the road itself takes in so much, and it's so interesting to follow it, that I think I don't find it one of those roads that makes a zone difficult. I find it's one of those roads that the experience of which really enhances the zone. And we haven't done a lot of talking about quests this show, because I think a lot of the quests in the various areas.
The point was, the most talking about quests we did was in Dustwallow.
Exactly.
And because the quests in Desolus were beyond the scent or reputation stuff aren't very unique.
Yeah.
And again, here they're not terribly unique.
No, although one point to note is that this is probably where you might first come across an Ooks quest.
Oh yes, the dreaded Ooks quests.
Which, say dreaded, you make a point of doing them all the time.
I do that. Well, I specifically did the Mongophony. If you don't know the Ooks quests, in Ferelas, Tanaris, and the Hinterlands, every mob has a chance of dropping a distress beacon, an Ooks distress beacon, which starts a quest. The quest in each zone is to go and find a mechanical chicken and escort it to safety. If you do all three, you have to handle these quests in at Booty Bay. If you do all three, the quest giver at Booty Bay will give you a mechanical chicken pet. It's the only way to get that pet, by doing all three of those quests. And I think there's some sort of mess up where if you take the quest, start it, abandon it or something, you're then never going to be able to complete it. So be careful. If you're serious about your pets, be careful about it. That's why I did the Mongophony. When I did the Mongophony, they were still so long. I think there's only one escort quest which is longer than any of those, and that is the Torta quest in Tanaris. Oh, which is just a nightmare quest. But they used to be really long escort quests for these chickens, and they were tough. The mobs you got thrown at you were tough to kill. They have since radically shortened them.
Yeah. In fact, the one in Ferelas is almost laughable now.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculously easy.
Yeah.
But no, I won't say that, because actually I think there's lots of other mobs that can get involved and it can be tricky, but
compared to how it used to be.
But yeah, recently I've done the Tanaris one, I've done the Ferelas one, and they are both so much shorter. But yeah, keep an eye out for the Ooks quests. They're good fun, and with a good final reward if you do all three. So yes, talking about quests, we haven't talked about many of the quests in Ferelas or in Desolus, simply because there's nothing.
Yeah.
There aren't many that are particularly special or exciting, which is a shame. I hope that, we know Desolus is going to change quite significantly in Cataclysm. I'm not sure how much Ferelas is going to change, but I think Ferelas in particular deserves to be a nice place.
Yeah.
To be a rewarding place to quest, to be a fun place to quest, because it is such a well-designed zone in terms of how it looks, maybe not how it flows.
Yeah, and you've got to assume that it's going to change at least somewhat because of the nature of that border with Thousand Needles.
Yes, I guess.
Surely. Unless something very strange
happens.
The
land could be raised or something, I don't know. But it's going to be in trouble for sure.
Absolutely.
So that, we're not quite done with Ferelas yet, though. First of all, we're going to hear from Bayera with another of her alliance reports, and then we'll be talking about the other main landmark in the zone.
Yeah, and unusually this time a little bit, Bayera is actually tying together two of the zones that we've seen today already, so she's going to talk about Ferelas and Desolus as a pair.
Alliance questing in Desolus doesn't differ much from the Horde experience, so I'm going to focus on the elven lore that ties this zone to Ferelas. Desolus fell prey to two catastrophes, the War of the Ancients and the predations of the Centaur. According to legend, Zaytor, son of Cenarius, fell in love with an earth elemental, and their illicit affair produced the Centaurs of Desolus. Story has it that the Centaurs, repulsed at their own twisted appearance, killed their father. The Earth Princess buried him in Moradon. Meanwhile, her children divided into the 5 tribes that control Desolus today. The Centaur have ravaged the land, but they've only continued a cycle of destruction started by those who once kept order here, the Night Elves. The runes strewn across Desolus and Feralus attest to the might of the Kaldari Empire under Queen Ashara. By then, Night Elf society had split into 2 classes, those who used arcane magic, called the Highborn, and those who did not. Increasingly addicted to their magic, the Highborn had become corrupt and were resented by the lower classes, but Queen Ashara encouraged their experiments. Their heedless use of the Well of Eternity sent ripples into the twisting nether, attracting the Dark Titan, Sargeras. Seduced by promises of power, Ashara and her counselor Xavius agreed to give the Burning Legion passage into Azeroth. Finally, some of the Night Elves turned on the Highborn and tried to stop Ashara. They nearly lost. As it was, the shattering of the Highborn's portal caused the Well of Eternity itself to explode, sundering Kalimdor, wrecking the Elven Empire, and creating a maelstrom that sent Ashara's followers to the bottom of the sea. Many of these events took place elsewhere, so why talk about them here? Desolus serves as the most potent reminder of the consequences of the War of the Ancients. Before the sundering, lush forests covered this now barren land. The ruins of cities once peopled by the beautiful and the wise now harbor the twisted forms of creatures who were once Night Elves. The Naga are what remained of the Highborn who stayed loyal to Ashara, their bodies twisted and transformed by the old gods. The Satyrs are the Night Elf followers of Xavius. Sargeras tortured him and turned him into a satyr, giving him the power to turn others as well. Burning Legion Felguard, succubi, and warlocks roam southern Desolus, forming Manaroth Coven, named for the Pitlord Manaroth. To the south, Feralus bears its own reminders of the War of the Ancients. Like Desolus, Naga-infested shores and crumbled Night Elf architecture litters the entire region. The ruins of Ravenwood are guarded by harpies, said to be yet another creature formed from Night Elves during the War of the Ancients. Gurdunni ogres, immigrants from Draenor, inhabit most of the other ruins, including Dire Maul, which was once known as Eldrathalas, where Ashara collected her most powerful sorcerers and hid her darkest secrets. Allies must adventure deep into Feralus before finding a haven in Feathermoon Hold. From there, they are sent to investigate the ruins, find highborn artifacts, fight ogres, and track down a missing courier who is about to become a feast for bugs. In addition, there are a couple of fun secrets. If you go to the Grim Totem Outpost and run all the way to the west end of it, you'll find a cage full of sprite darters. Run around the back side of a nearby tree, and there'll be a path leading upwards. It doesn't look like a path, but it is one. It'll take you to 2 Night Elves, Kindle and Jerkai. Finish all the Alliance-only quests they have, and you'll get yourself a sprite darter pet without having to spend hours killing sprite darters. The other 2 hidden away bits are rather pointless but fun to explore. On the southeast side of the Isle of Dread, you can access the interior of the island, a shadowed valley teeming with elite level 60 Shimmera and Lord Lakmarin, who used to be part of the Scepter of Shifting Sands quest chain. On the north end of the isle is Lord Shalzaru's lair, which is not a surprise in and of itself, but there is a secret chamber. When you find Lord Shalzaru, he'll be on an island in a puddle of water. Go to the western end and dive down through an underwater cavern leading to the southwest. There you'll find another pair of caverns, and, if you're in luck, there'll be a rare spawn named Lady Sazala. Feralus may not have suffered the environmental devastation of Desolus, but it is a far cry from what it once was. With its improbable ferry boat circling needlessly and endlessly around the island, Feathermoon Hold offers the barest essentials where once an elven empire flourished.
Okay, so before we leave Feralus and wrap up the show, we wanted to deal with one particular thing in Feralus. Now, as you know, we deal mainly in the zones here. We have Crashing on every show who looks at the instances as we go along. But many of you picked up on Dire Maul in Feralus as being one of the highlights of the zone. And it's an interesting instance in that it feels much more so than any other instance, I think. It feels like it sprawls into the zone itself.
Yeah.
So we have a few comments from, before we hear from Crashing, we've got a few comments in the thread from people.
So so Chandris, to start with, says, let's not forget Diamol, beautifully designed area with three great looking and fun instances. Only problem is you better have a tour guide who knows the lay of the land or you may never find your way out again. And oh my word, I know what he means about that.
That is very true. And someone with a key is useful.
Yes.
Key.
Yeah, totally. Delphin also says, you know, Diamol is, in my opinion, one of the most impressive instances in the old world to see from the outside, which is, again, that point about how it extends into the zone. Ancient and overgrown architecture on a grand scale with a fun little addition of an utterly random free-for-all PvP zone right in the middle. So, a few people made the point that Diamol is almost, it almost defines the zone in a way, or it has a place in the zone that very few other instances do. It's like you said, you can actually do quite a lot in the Diamol complex before you go near the instance portal, and I think that's part of the reason why it feels like it's part of the zone more than somewhere that where you just, you know, you go to a doorway and off you go into the instance. Diamol, from my point of view, I've only done it a few times. It is a bit big. It is quite fun. There are some really fun elements to it.
Yeah, some great boss fights.
And yes, and one of the things that is specific to it that Faust actually made a point about on the on the thread is the ability to do the Diamol tribute run, which is something you don't tend to hear a great deal about these days. It's obviously because a lot of people just run in there to do the instance for the achievement and don't really pay much attention to it. But, you know, again, I won't go into all the detail, but check out the Postcards Podcast episode 6 thread on the AIE forums and see Faust's discussion of the effort that it used to go into setting up and properly running the Diamol tribute run, which is something that is a little bit, I think, lost to a lot of people these days. Anyway, on that note, here's Crashing talking about Diamol.
Today we're taking a look at Diamol. It's a beautifully designed instance with a really interesting game mechanic at the end. Before we get into that, a little history. Diamol is located in the central region of Feralis. A long time ago, it was a high elf city called something elvish and typically unpronounceable, but it's since fallen into disrepair and now is inhabited by a variety of enemy types. It's a visually attractive dungeon. It really feels like an old city that the jungle has started to reclaim. Unlike an instance like Nomergon, which was supposed to have been a city but really never felt like it while you were there, you can imagine the high elves living in Diamol. Not to get overly poetic, but there's a feeling of faded majesty in the place. It's lots of big crumbled statues and Colosseum-type areas. Actually, there's a literal Colosseum and a bunch of other things that makes it feel like a real place. The instance is broken up into wings, cleverly named the East, West, and North Wings. These are on a progression, so completing a quest in the East Wing gets you the key to the West Wing, and finishing the West Wing gets you to the North. The East Wing has been overrun by demons and little Shop of Horror-style plants. It's fun, but not particularly difficult. The West Wing is chock full of dead high elves who are none too pleased with their lot and unlife. It's more difficult than the East Wing, but not overly so. Connecting the West and North Wings is a free-for-all PvP arena like the one in Stranglethorn. This arena was actually featured in the World of Warcraft comic book. It's the North Wing where things get interesting. You can complete the North Wing just like any other instance. It's full of the Gordok tribe of ogres, and there's nothing to stop you from rolling through the instance, killing everything that moves, and when I ran the dungeon with the random group, this is what we did. At the time, I had no idea there was a much more unusual and fun option. In the North Wing of Diamol, you can complete what's called a tribute run. The instance is set up so, using a variety of crafting materials and exercising a little caution, you can get all the way to the end of the instance without killing any of the bosses. At one point, for example, you have to take a variety of materials to an NPC who will then make you an ogre costume. At another point, you have to repair a broken trap so one of the bosses cares more about it than coming after you and killing you. If you're successful, you arrive at the end of the instance where you have to fight the Ogre King. Defeat him and you are declared the Ogre King. You get better loot, and then you can go back to each of the bosses you skipped, and they treat you in a manner your station deserves, and they'll give you better loot than they would have dropped had you killed them. You can get buffs and quests from them as well. It's very cool, and it's a lot more fun than just laying waste to the entire place. I'm not sure there's anything like it anywhere else in the game. If you're planning on doing a tribute run at level, though, I would recommend you bring your own group. I just can't imagine explaining everything that you need to do to a group of strangers, especially when most of the time, as everybody knows, in the Looking for Dungeon tool, people just want to get through as fast as they possibly can. Diamol is well worth your time. It looks great, and it's fun even before you add in the wonderful tribute run option. I highly, highly recommend checking it out. That's it for this week. Next week, we'll take a look at another multi-winged instance, the Scarlet Monastery.
So we've just about reached the end of episode 6. Hope you've enjoyed it.
I have, thank you.
I wasn't asking you. I was asking them, although I wouldn't be able to hear the listeners say they enjoyed it anyway. But I hope you did.
But I'm sure they are saying, yes, thank you, we enjoyed it very much. Gaffoni and Arezzo.
Yes. So there will be an episode thread on the... sorry, I missed the important bit. There will be an episode 7 thread on the AIE General Discussion Forums right about now. For the next show, we would like to hear what you think about Stranglethorn Vale and the Hinterlands, two very trollful zones.
Use that a new word.
Yeah. We're sure you'll have tons of stories about Stranglethorn. I bet anyone who's ever leveled on a PvP server has something to say about that place. And I'll be really interested to hear what people think about Hinterlands, because I'll let you into a little secret. We forgot it. When we were making the plans for this podcast and deciding which episodes would cover which zones, we completely forgot the Hinterlands. It was actually Beira, I think, who pointed it out to us.
By we, he means him.
Yeah, true. But you saw the plans too, yeah, and you didn't. I think I trusted you. I was wrong. I think I know why I forgot it, because there is knack all for the Horde to do there.
It is a bit of a...
There's a quest hub, which, as we said before, is a real, you know...
pain to get to.
Yeah. There aren't a lot of quests when you get there.
No.
There's just no reason to go. Very little reason. That said, if you do go... I'm chipping into the content of the next show. But if you do go, if you do hang out there, and if you do follow some of the troll quests, there is one of the most breathtakingly complex, non-instanced quest areas, I think.
Oh, yeah.
But we will come to that on the next show.
Yeah.
We'd like to hear what you have to say on the Hinterlands and Stranglethorn Vale in the thread. If you're listening to the enhanced version of the podcast, there'll be a link on your screen to click now.
You can also contact us by email at postcards@aie-guild.org. Don't forget, you're also very welcome to send us a voice clip if you would like to say what you think about either of those zones. And apart from that, one of the things that we obviously need to do is to say thank you very much to our regular co-contributors on today's show. So thanks to Irisine for the postcards of the zones, to Beira for the Alliance viewpoint, and to Crashing for the Dire Maul interlude.
And I think that brings us to the end. Thanks again for listening. We hope you enjoy it. Let us know what you think of those zones, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks, honestly.
Honestly, this time. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.